GAA on Off the Ball.
Alan Brogan, Alan, you're very welcome to, I think this is, you mentioned your first time in the new Off the Ball studio.
Thanks, Rich. Been on Off the Ball a few times, my first time in the new studio, so yeah, it's an honour.
You were pointing out the various bits of paraphernalia that are sitting around us behind the shelves and on the desk and stuff like that. Anthony, you want to might add to it yourself?
It seems to change a lot. I see the life-size truck Kevin Caban that I sent in a couple of months ago has been put in the recycling bin at this stage.
Would you believe it was very hard to get that out of his house? He just had it lying around and was looking after it himself. But
it was a bit of crack, wasn't it?
Absolutely. We do have to say you're here with us with thanks to Goal. You're obviously a Goal ambassador for more of your work and their work as well. Goalglobal.com is the place to look. But today is a very kind of special occasion, a very special reason for you to drop into the studio, because we're auctioning off a very specially commissioned piece of art, which is a collaboration between yourself and Mark Baker, who is a portrait artist who's done the likes of Barack Obama and Steven Spielberg down through the years as well. Dublin football and some key moments in Dublin football has now been immortalised in this globe, the global world of Dublin football. If you can describe a couple of bits and pieces, we see like Jimmy Keaveney and Barney Rocker on there, you and Bernard are on there, Brian Cullen lifting Sam Maguire in 2011 is on there as well. It's a really unique and really remarkable piece.
Yeah, it is. And I suppose like I've been ambassador for Goal for a number of years, and they ran a fundraiser auction a couple of months ago where they got sports people or celebrities to collaborate with an artist and to come up with an idea, paint it on the globe and then auction off the globe. So myself and Mark, who's an unbelievable artist, if you look at the stuff online, some of the portraits and the level of detail is absolutely phenomenal. So between myself and Mark, we came up with this idea to Dublin Legends, we call it, and we kind of look back to the 70s and we've kind of tried to hit each decade. So as we go from Jimmy Keaveney to Barney Rock to J.O. to Stephen Cluxton, myself and Bernard. Mark insisted I'd be on it, even though I wanted to leave. myself off it. With Brian Cullen, and then obviously Kieran Kilkenny from off the current team. Each guy has signed it, which is a bit unique in itself.
Brilliant.
I suppose it's just like I was trying to pick out a player from each of the special teams, say from the 70s, obviously who's more iconic than Jimmy Keaveney. You move on to 83 then, you obviously have Barney Rock, move on to 95, who else but J.O. And then on to say the 2010, 2011, Stephen obviously in Goal, Brian Cullen the captain, and I wanted to put Bernard on it, but Mark insisted I put myself and Bernard on it. And then
did you put up much of a fight, like, or?
I didn't really. I was happy enough when he insisted. but if you see it, I'm sure it'd be on screen. Where like the level of details Mark on is unbelievable. And we decided we'd hold it back. Goal held an auction a number of months ago to raise much needed funds for their efforts over in the likes of Syria and Uganda and stuff. We decided we'd hold this back for hoping Dublin would reach the All Ireland final, and maybe we might auction it off somewhere in the lead up to the All Ireland final. So it's worked out well so far. Thanks for giving us the opportunity to do it today. And I think, look, it's a lovely piece and look lovely in the reception of somebody's business in Dublin here somewhere. So look, hopefully we can raise a few much needed quid for Goal.
Yeah, I don't think we'll be short of takers of this one. As part of the auction, we're also including two tickets to the All-Ireland Football Final as well. And to take part, if you want to get involved in this, text the word Goal, your bid amount and your name to 53106. It'll just cost you 30 cents. We'll keep the bidding process going across the day as well. So it won't just end with this interview. We'll keep it going throughout the show tonight as well. And the winning bid will be announced on tomorrow morning's OTB AM. Want to take you through a couple of moments that are kind of, I suppose, captured within the piece. I'm going to, you know, suppose, because I know we went to the same secondary school, so you're a year or two, I think, ahead of me, without wanting to age you too much. So Jimmy Keaveney might be beyond your kind of memory. We'll get into Jason Sherlock, because the spectre of that 95 All-Ireland win would have hung in the same way that the early 80s and 70s ones would have done for the latter era Dublin teams. That 95 one kind of hung in the air for Dublin a lot, because like you would have been in that hall when some of the team would have paraded the Sam Maguire and kind of remember what that would have meant to the city and to county at the time.
Yeah, well, I remember J.O. coming into Declan's with Mick Galvin, who was obviously a past pupil and played with Plunkett's at the time, my own club, and it was so big in the city. It was very much like 2011 for us. It had been since 1983 that Dublin hadn't managed to win in All-Ireland, and I suppose the impact J.O. had that year was huge in terms of the difference he made to the team. Like the team, for so for those that remember, had nearly got there for the previous 4 or 5 years, beaten by Donegal in 92 and they expected to win, beaten by Down, beaten by Derry 1 year. So they'd been 3 or 4 years, 5 years on the road, and I suppose they finally managed to get it over the line in 1995, and obviously Jay was such a huge part of that, made such a difference. And I suppose even after that, when Jay went down, like, I'd say Jay probably had better years after that, like, especially from maybe from when Pillar got in charge. Like, Jay was a much better footballer probably than he was in 95, but the difference he made that year and the impetus he gave to the team was probably that little bit they needed to get them over the line.
Some might say, I'm not saying this is exactly true, some might say that you were a similar case in 2011, and that I don't think you look necessarily that. You mentioned in an interview with Paul Kimmage, for instance, that if you were to try and make it now, that chances are it probably wouldn't happen for you. But it did back in the early 2000s, 2002, you would have made your debut, would have gone through a couple of managers, a few disappointments as part of the Dublin side. Then you come to, you know, 2009, that humbling by Kerry in the quarterfinal, you realised you kind of had to change your game. We'd put our coffee in a couple of weeks ago, looking ahead to the Dublin Mayo game, and he was speaking about his time in charge of Dublin and how the change in the guard around 2011, and your name happened to come up. If you could stick your earphones in, actually, and just give this a quick listen. They're just hanging around your neck there. This is Pillar Caffrey, and basically what he had to say, particularly about you, it was all kinds, but this is a couple of weeks ago.
Wheelo, you know, Darren Holman missed another great servant for Dublin. Shane Ryan missed another guy that soldiered in boat camps. You know what I mean? They would have been the real hardcore. But when you look at Klucko, who was there and came through, the other one that I was thrilled for on a personal level that hung on and got it was Alan Brogan, because he was very nearly gone.
Was he really?
Yeah.
For 2011?
Yeah, yeah, he was very nearly gone.
Because he was fed up or because his body?
No, because he wasn't seen as part of the plan going forward. And, you know, he had a huge impact. He reinvented himself a little bit.
He's Footballer of the Year in 2011, wasn't
he? Yeah, Alan, in our team, we would have been like the Kieran MacDonald scenario with John Mahon. Get the ball to Alan. He was our best forward. He carried my team, you know, for a couple of years on his back nearly. Every day he went out, he was the go-to player. When he played at centre-forward, he played inside. So, you know, Alan, Pat demanded a different model. And Alan all of a sudden had to turn into an animal in terms of chasing back and tackling and getting turnovers and all part of that, more of the modern game than was back then.
Yeah.
When that came up, I was trying to think of around about the time of 2010, 2011, that kind of crossover. And if I don't actually leave them in because they might just feed back into the mic, I was trying to think back to those times as well. And if I'd misremembered that there was, you know, talk of your potential retirement or stepping away, like when he talks about you maybe not coming back for 2011, how close did you come?
Yeah, like, I don't think it was a case I wouldn't have come back. It was a case of maybe how was I going to fit into the team. Obviously Pat was changing things, and it was becoming, like, he's right, Pillar's right, it was more important. When like after Kerry beat us in 09, Pat drew a line in the sand and he said, right, we're just going to get our defensive structure right first. And for 6 months, Pat wasn't even worried about what went on up the other end of the field. And I actually spoke to Pat this morning. We spoke about Mayo and how maybe they haven't managed to sort out their defence over the last number of years. And like we spoke about how we spent 6 months just concentrating on our defence and nothing else. And the six backs weren't allowed across the halfway line. One midfielder always stayed back. So we got that part of our house in order first. And then the forward started to buy into that. And I suppose for me, it was a change. As Pillar says, I always played on the inside forward line when Pillar was in charge. I moved out to centre forward and had to become more of an all-rounder player. And probably a bit like Jay, I probably became a better player for the team in my latter years than I had been in my early years, even though I probably got more scores in the early years. And I think another thing for the Dublin team in 2010-2011, I think, like as Pillar said, while I was playing inside forward and I was probably our top score getter, I probably wasn't at the level, say, of as maybe Bernard is a score getter, or maybe the Gooch was a score getter. So in a way, it probably benefited the team that I moved out to centre forward and allowed Bernard to play, maybe to play a role closer to goal. Because it was funny, under Pillar, Bernard actually started as a wing forward. Like his first big championship game was against Laois, started number 12, and we got a goal that day. So like, it's funny how things come around.
But, did his progress to the team actually put a bit of odd pressure on you?
in the way of how you were both kind of going to fit into that forward line?
Yeah, no, I don't think, I never felt it like that. I was happy to move out to centre forward. You got a bit more space out there. I was able to play that playmaking role a little bit more, which I enjoyed as well. You probably get a bit more attention in the full forward line in terms of defenders and stuff. So I was happy to move out there. It was kind of gave me a new lease of life. And similar to the way the Gooch moved out, maybe towards the end of his career, he moved out to centre forward. Maybe when you lose that little bit of pace, it's just easier to find a bit of space out around the half forward line than it was inside. And I think it benefited the team, me going out and allowing Bernard to play that role inside.
But obviously, with the quote unquote losing a pace that people tend to get when they get older, maybe Andy Moran's probably the exception to the rule, or those along those lines, you do get that view of the game that you don't necessarily have, but it's a view that's born of experience of having 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years in the side, that you're able to know how different players are going to play, that you're able to tell how different phases of play are going to unfold, that you can almost think 2 or 3 steps ahead, and that more withdrawn role can suit the more experienced player.
Yeah, it was certainly in the case of even playing with the likes of Jay, or say the likes of Mossy Quinn, these guys who I'd played for a long time. Like, I knew, and they knew the way I like to play football inside out. But I think my relationship with Bernard on the field, whilst we never got into it too much, we had a very good understanding. I just knew where Bernard wanted the ball, and he knew where I was going to put it. We didn't have to look. We just had an understanding on the field that. Whether it was right, off my right or left foot, I knew where he wanted it, and he knew where to make the run to. And I was listening to Mossy Quinn a few weeks ago. He was talking about Dermot Connolly, and he's saying when he's playing inside, he can make any run he wants because Dermot can hit him with. And that's the way myself and Bernard operated. I think I allowed Bernard to make whichever run he wanted to make, and then it was up to me to execute the ball into him. And more often than not, look, it came off some days better than others, but we had a very good understanding on the field.
Talk me through a little bit of that day in 2011 that's captured in the piece here that we're auctioning off, because I was watching one of the videos back in it today. The fervour that was around town on that day, that this was going to be the one where Dublin finally got over the line, or at least that was the hope that was going around town. Was that something, because you've talked today in your piece in Herald and stuff, that this feels like a weird calm before the storm, that you almost don't want to be talking about it, because talking about it leads to another 8-9 days of talking about it, and you're going to be just, if you're a player, trying to keep focused as best you can. Talk about the lead up to that game in 2011 and what that was like for the squad.
Yeah, I think we spent a huge amount of time trying to hide away from a lot of the build-up, to be honest with you. And like it was such a huge game for us, and because we thought this the one we were going to get it over the line. We hadn't been in a final since 1995, so like I think a lot of people were maybe coming with a bit of hope more than expectation that we were going to win that game. And I think for us as players, it was about trying to like in fairness to Pat, as Jim does now, all the press conference were out of the way early, the issue with tickets was out of the way early, the suits for after the match, so all that was looked after by the management. It just let us focus on the match. And I spoke in an article in the Herald a couple of weeks ago that Pat had an analogy of a jam jar over a bee, and all the noise coming out in from the outside, and you're trying to block that noise out. And like we spoke about it a lot in the dressing room, how you can't avoid people in the street, you can't avoid people at work, you can't avoid people at home or whatever asking questions about it, but it's how you process that in your mind, and how it comes in and it goes out straight away. And I often kind of spoke about, if you just, you know those toys where you pull the string at the back and it gives a stock answer, you press a button at the back of the toy, it gives a stock answer. That's what we spoke about. You got to be like one of them lads and lead up to this game. You give your stock answer and you try and change the subject and you move on to the next topic. And it's not being rude, or it's just what mattered to us was just performing in this match, and that was the best way to go about it for us, or for any team performing or trying to get ready for a match at that of that magnitude.
I've never heard about it actually spoken, that you give the stock answer when asked, because I guess a lot of the talk around GAA interviews in particular is that a lot of it comes down to access. Maybe access isn't what it used to be, and there's numerous reasons for that we could go into, but there was a slight mention that basically just get the stock answer, it's okay.
Yeah, I think there's a difference kind of between before a game and after a game. I think it's very controlled now by all teams. I know the mud is thrown at Dublin about control or whatever, but every manager tries to control their players now, and like they don't, and getting out there might affect how the team performs in the day. But like for sure after matches we can maybe see a little bit more character, a bit more talk from players. But before games you just want to go into lockdown. There's certain duties you have to that you have to undertake, but you can be sure that stock answers are rolled out by not just by Dublin, by all counties,
yeah,
before games. And like for us kind of getting into a conversation before the biggest match of your life in 2011 about who's going to play well, who's going to start, who's not going to start, it's not good. No. Like, it's not good for preparation, so you're doing everything you can to get away from those questions, and you surround yourself with friends. Like, none of my friends would have asked me about football when I was playing because they knew I didn't want to talk about. None of my family would have asked me about football because they knew we didn't want to talk about it, unless we were having a conversation with my dad or my brothers or whatever. But like, apart from that, we just didn't speak about it.
That's a two-way street though as well, because you can imagine you've obviously worked your whole life and you end up slowly surrounding yourself with this group of people, whether it's your friends and whatever. Like, if you end up talking about the one thing, like, they're not going to come to you and talk about working in a pipefitters or working in a shop or working in a bank or whatever, and constantly that's going to be the only topic of conversation. Like, nor would they, just because you're Alan Brogan, you play for Dublin. Like, if you were to spend the whole day going, well, listen, lads, this is what Paul was saying to us, and we're doing this, and this, you know, that's just going to be a weird conversation regardless anyway.
Yeah, and it just doesn't, like, it's not real life. You just don't talk about it. Right? Like, my wife might ask me when I came home how I was training, but that was as deep as it got. If there's something I had to tell her, I might tell her. But I wasn't kind of likewise with my friends. Like, my close friends would never have asked me about football. Still probably wouldn't ask me about football because they know it's probably not something that I want to talk about. But certainly when you're playing, you got to try, like, in the next 10 days. And 10 days, like, I'll be 10 days out now. 10 days leading into a game like that is a long time. So a huge part of the preparation for that game is not done on the training field now, it's done off the training field, and how you're getting your focus and your mind right, and part of that is being able to block out those distractions around you in the lead up to a match, whether it's people want to talk about or whether it's five in a row or whether it's for Kerry rewriting the history books and stopping the five in a row. So I think both teams are in a similar boat.
You've got the column and all that now. Is there an environment in which you do actually enjoy talking about football?
Oh yeah, for sure I do now when I'm not personally invested in the team. Yeah. I think it's different now, and I enjoy giving a bit of an insight into what I would have went through or what the players might be going through now, because that's kind of what I think that's what people are interested in now, rather than the actual analysis of a game. Like, kind of everyone who has an interest in kind of Dublin football or Kerry football probably know how both teams are going to play in the day now, and it's going to come down to which team performs better. So I think I'd like to give an insight maybe into how what's gone through guys' minds in the lead up to this game, how they're preparing and how they're managed to block out distractions and stuff like that, and how we would have done it over the course of my career.
Stephen Cluxton's on that piece as well. He's somebody who's kind of been a master at blocking out all distractions. When we think about that, you know, that free in 2011 where he's beckoned up to the top of the pitch to try and take this free, and I think he's probably the coolest man in the whole stadium. What was your feeling when you saw him coming towards the ball, at least anyway?
Yeah, like I've spoken about before, like, he was the right man for the kick. It was in, like, we used to talk about a sweet spot in the field where your favourite spot in the field for shooting is, and that was his sweet spot in the field. And like, I'd seen him kick them from there. Look, it's been well spoke with Stephen, be at training, he might be there half an hour before everyone else. I'd rock into the car park and he's out in the field putting down the ball, kicking balls over the bar. So look, he'd done it a million times beforehand, and was huge pressure on the kick. Like, he was the right man for the job. And I think Bernard was kicking the frees, or maybe kicking the close in frees that day, and he had the ball in his hands, and we all remember, I'd say Bernard had a little look at the post and decided this is a little bit out of my range for the left foot, so I'll call Stephen up. But it was huge balls to kick a score like that from there in the situation it was, no matter how many times you practice it in training.
Are you surprised that nobody's kind of come to his level, really? Not necessarily with Dublin, but I mean, like, inter-county wise, there are very fine keepers posted around the country, and we've seen different ones claim All-Stars in the past few years, especially when you think like Rory Began, etc. Are you surprised that no one's come to his level, and no one's come to his level of longevity around the country?
Yeah, like, he's.
Or is it just a unique case?
Yeah, I think he's a unique case. Like he keeps himself so well. He prepares so diligently for, like, he's a year older than me. He's a job gone on. He's a lot of other stuff going on in his life. But this is, like, playing football is his sole focus, and the way he prepares and he comes up with the plans for his kick-out strategies and stuff, like, that's obviously, like, he works with Jim and the management and stuff like that, but a lot of that is devised by Steve, and a lot of hours in his mind go into that stuff, and obviously the way he executes some of his kicks, particularly under pressure when he's needed, is that's what sets him apart from the rest. But yeah, look, there's probably keepers out there that are as good a shot stopper as he is, but Like, I think his kickouts his kickouts are really what sets him apart from anyone else, and how he's kept himself over the course. Like, he made his championship debut 2001, the year before me, or 2019. He's 18 years at it now. Like, it's just phenomenal to go to the amount of time he has and keep his performance levels as consistent as he's kept them since he made his debut.
What's he like in a personal level?
Yeah, like, look, there's a perception about Stephen because he doesn't do much with the media, he's not known well, but anyone who's in that group or any of his friends, like, he's just a normal Joe. When we go in for a few pints after a match or whatever, he sits around like one of the rest of the lads. He can be intense when he's preparing for matches because he demands standards. He has his own standards and they're high standards, and he demands them of everyone else. So I don't think you can fault him that. He's just not interested in the media side of things. Like, he's probably a bit shy, Stephen, to be fair. Like, he wouldn't take, he's not into the plot. He talked about All-Star, he's not particularly into All-Stars. Like, even saying well done to him or whatever, he'd be shying away from you on the field if you give him a bit of praise, or in the restroom give him a bit of praise. He doesn't want praise, he just wants to do the best he can for the team. And he's been a phenomenal servant of the team, and a great leader for everyone that has come through that Christmas.
You mentioned that he obviously has, like, much like pretty much the entirety of the intercounty team would have a job and have all their interests outside of the game itself. You tweeted, I think, a link to what Chris Barrett goes through in his pretty much day to day to try and be an intercounty footballer, and how he tries to marry that to his personal life. Kieran Donaghy was on with us in the Shot Clock there yesterday. He mentioned how tax breaks might be some way of an incentive. Paul Flynn, as part of the GPA, has mentioned it before. I don't know your exact thoughts on it. The best way to go about it?
Like, I haven't delved into it too deeply, but I know it was raised a number of years ago, and it was cold water poured on it because we don't earn our money from the actual sport. Obviously, we have jobs outside of sport, but look, for me, I look at the game now and I see a lot of guys, like, after reading Chris's article, and I think he's a surveyor in Dublin, like, what he goes through to go training, like, it's just phenomenal. I used to give out about if the traffic was bad on the M50 going across the Ballymun, but like, what the county players are given now is, and I got some tweets back when I tweeted that about why should you get it, or why should the county players get it, and the club players shouldn't get it, or the guy that puts up the nets, and some people understand, but the effort and the commitment that goes into playing into county football at the highest level is just phenomenal now. And guys are putting lives on hold, they're putting careers on hold for it, they're putting families on hold for it. And I know that because I've seen it firsthand. Like, there's a lot of guys becoming teachers now.
Gives them the summer.
Give them the summer. Someone might want to be teachers. I think in a lot of cases, because they know for their inter-county careers, they can have the summers off and they can concentrate on football. I know myself, I started accountancy exams when I was 22 or 23. I did a couple of exams and then I was getting in the way of football going to lecture, so I just parked it. Now, that was my decision, I know.
Of course.
Lots of other guys went on and did accountancy exams, but it was getting in the way of my football, and I probably took the easy route and said I'll concentrate on the football and not bother with the accountancy exam. So there's decisions like that being made by inter-county footballers all over the country because of the effort levels that are required to play inter-county football and to get to the level you need to be at if you want to compete against the Dublins or the Mayos or whatever. So for me, I think, and I wouldn't be for pay for play or professionalism or anything like that, but something like a tax break might just give a little few quid at the end of someone's career that maybe you can put a deposit on a house, or you can get yourself a car or something like that. Like, other sports people in Ireland have them, artists have them in Ireland. There's tax breaks in arts and culture, stuff like that. There's tax breaks for guys writing books. So I don't know, maybe it's not a runner, it might be hard to ring fence it, but I'm sure where there's a will there's a way. And like, I just think the level that it's gone to now is like, I'm not sure it's sustainable. Like, you look at Stephen now, 18 years, and he's definitely put his life on hold to play inter-county football. I played for 14 years. I think as the years go on, we're going to see the inter-county career become less and less. I don't think you'll see too many.
As in a shortening duration?
Yeah, I think for sure, yeah. Because I think life's a bit harder now than it was maybe 10 or 15 years ago. Back, like, even when I started playing, you could kind of get a job as a sales rep and you could have a handy enough number, maybe be home at 2 o'clock to get ready for training, or 3 o'clock to get ready for training. Now you're asking, look at Chris, he's asking an employer in Dublin kind of to let him go at 3 o'clock so he can go home to train. And like, that's fine if he has an understanding employer, but when the time comes for a promotion, like, is Chris going to get the promotion over somebody else who's maybe working at 6 or 7 o'clock every evening? I'm not sure how good Chris is as a quantity surveyor, and I'm just saying about Chris, but like, kind of that scenario has happened everywhere. Guys have to leave early when it comes to promotion. Who are they going to give the promotion? It's more than likely going to be the guy that's working the longer hours.
Four years. Seems like in football terms, it seems like a long time now since you stepped away. Like, what was your last year? Say, what was the amount of hours per week that you would have been putting into to training or just dedicated towards the Dublin side?
Yeah, it's hard to say in terms of hours, but you'd be like you'd be in the gym on a Monday night, you'd be training on Tuesday and Thursday, you're probably doing a bit in the gym yourself on a Friday, and you'd be out on a Saturday, and if there was a game on a Sunday, you'd be out on a Sunday. So guys are at something, whether it's training or recovery, they're at something 6 days a week, maybe even 7 days a week, some guys. Which is a lot. And it means a lot of sacrifice. And I know guys do it because they love it, and I wouldn't change it for the world. Like, I wouldn't have no regrets whatsoever about doing it. But like, if we want guys to keep doing, if you want our top players to kind of keep playing into their 30s, which we do, I think, like you see Bernard there now, I think...
People develop into their best selves towards that age.
Some guys do look of, like Andy Moran still going. I think it's like, it would have been so easy for Andy Moran to walk away five years ago. So we want guys to keep playing until they can't give any more. But I think the way it's going now, kind of guys will start to step away a little bit earlier, and I think we've started to see that already, to be honest with you.
Where do you watch Sunday week?
I'll be in there. I'll be in Crow Park, yeah, for sure. I think it's been a quiet enough build up so far since the hurling, but I think it'll start to ramp up over the next week, and there'll obviously be a lot of talk next week about the five in a row, and obviously Kerry will want that, but I think on the other side, kind of Kerry are the one team that maybe have beaten Dublin in the National League over the last couple of years, beat them in the final last year. So, obviously Dublin are favourites for it, but I think any day against Kerry, you can take nothing for granted. And Dublin will need to perform to if they want to win Sunday week.
Who knows? Maybe you might need to add to that piece of artwork you got there sitting beside you. If you want to get involved and bid on this fantastic gold globe, essentially, all you have to do is text the word goal, your bid amount and your name to 53106. The text will cost you 30 cents. And as I say, we're going to keep the bidding process going open across the day here on Off the Ball. And we'll announce the winner on tomorrow morning's OTB AM. For now, Alan Brogan, thanks so much for coming in.
Good to be with you, Richie. Thanks a million.
Cheers.
It's all over! Dublin have won the All-Ireland for 2015. It's taken them two tremendous games, but they have retained their title. A truly remarkable achievement. And Dublin are again the champions. The three in a row.
All along the banks of the Royal Canal.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Prove to everybody in the world that I am the best. Nobody can touch me.
Kalaski's just scored from a place ball, and he is now put one over the bar from play. Tyrone are very much on top in this All-Ireland final.
And 5-1 down, double players didn't blink. That meant resolve.
And it's a penalty awarded by the referee against Morgan. 21 minutes into this All-Ireland, and he buries it. Top corner.
But we're just trying to knock them down as they come. I don't know if we're counting. We've got a decent performance today, but as I say, when we look back, we'll probably do a little bit better.
O'Callaghan, he was getting a lot of ball now. O'Callaghan towards goal, he's brought down. No penalty, but it is a goal. Tapped in with the hand by Niall Scully, and suddenly Dublin now lead by 5.
He knows how to score from this sort of range. Hart against Cluxton, buries it.
For me, I wasn't thinking about winning at all this week. All I was thinking about was what's my performance going to be, what am I going to do in the performance. That's the process.
Pauly heading towards goal, uses the hand, and over it goes. The lead is 6, and Dublin are home and host.
Final whistle went. How did you feel? What were you thinking?
To be honest, I was thinking about my dad. You know, my dad unfortunately passed away this year, and even though he wasn't there physically, he wasn't there. He was there in spirit. So, you know, when that happens, you're just looking to the family and seeing the joy that you bring to your family's faces in such a tough year for us.
It's all down to the referee, and the referee has decided enough is enough, and the 4 in a row has been achieved by Dublin. 6 All-Ireland titles in 8 years.